103.7 FM St. Catharines. This is Point of View, and I'm your host, Sean Ligatfalvy. Today in the program, we have a very special interview with the administration of Brock University, who are implementing the $20 per credit student life fee. Now, as some of you may know, I was on the No campaign for the student life fee, and so I found it very interesting to hear from the administration about what is happening. We're going to have that right after headlines, but first, let's take a look at what's been happening around the Brock University community. Something came up on Friday at Isaac's when anti-abortionist Stephanie Gray from the Center for Bioethical Reform was invited by BUSU Ratified Club Brock Lifeline to speak at Isaac's. This drew the ire of some individuals on campus who attended the event in the audience heckling Ms. Gray. To the point where Ms. Gray asked the security staff, who are employees of BUSU, of Isaac's, to remove the protesters. At this moment, there was a male who got up, was apprehended by security and dragged out of campus. And this was then posted to the Overheard at Brock page. I posted the video, which was captured by Daniel Nardone. I posted it to the Overheard at Brock page, and more than 6,000 people saw that video over the last 4 days, creating quite a bit of controversy and generating quite a buzz.
So you have a choice. You can be silent.
Yes,
or
we have a choice.
Out of the presentation.
My body, so. My choice. My body, my choice. My body, my choice. My body, my choice. My body, my choice.
I've written an editorial overviewing the entire situation, including my involvement in it, at www.brockbug.com. This past Tuesday was a BUSU governance doubleheader. At 5 p.m. on Tuesday afternoon was the BUSU annual general meeting, which was attended by mostly BUSAC counselors, members of the media, Brock TV, Brock Press, and myself for Brock Radio were on location to cover the general meeting. What we heard from was each of the executives presenting who they are, the projects that they're involved in, and there was an opportunity for a brief question period. Later that evening, we had the fifth BUSAC meeting, Brock University Student Administrative Council meeting of 2013. And what we learned there was, well, not much. There wasn't any new business presented. We did hear from the campaigners from last year's student life fee referendum. And so this, they were telling us about the implementation of the fee, which is exactly what we're going to hear about directly from the administrators in this episode of this broadcast. The October referendums are coming up, and after reading week, campaigns will begin on October 21st. Today, the day of this broadcast on Thursday, is the last day that campaigns can officially sign up. You can contact cro@busu.net. Of course, the campaigns that are coming up are the removal of the $20 per credit student life fee, which was initiated by Anthony Deeb. Also, there's a continuation of the 85-cent per credit Student Justice Center levy, which was initiated by BUSAC due to expiry of the Memorandum of Understanding. There's a constitutional amendment referendum, which would see the petition quorum increase from 2% to 7%, and the referendum voting quorum increase from 10% to 14%. This would also delete the Vice President of University Affairs and roll his or her job into the Vice President of External Affairs, which was created by referendum last year. Also, there's a referendum for Brock Radio, initiated by BUSAC Councillor Danielle Hunter through a student-led petition. The $1.50 per credit Brock Radio ancillary fee is being challenged and will be voted on at the end of October. Voting period is October 29th through the 31st, and you can visit busu.net and check out all of the information there. You want to read the memorandums of understanding so that you understand what's going on. We're joined in the studio by members of the Brock University administration in charge of the $20 per credit student life fee implementation. We're joined by Kim Mead, the Vice Provost of Student Services, Robert Hilson, Director of Athletics, Karen McAllister Kenny, Director of Recreational Services, and Melody Schick-Porter, Director of Student Health Services. Thank you so much for joining me. We're going to first hear from the administration in terms of they're going to present the details of the implementation of the fee. The fee was approved by student referendum in March of 2013 with a vote of 54% in favor. The $20 per credit fee works out to about a $1.5 million fund, and that fund is being split among three departments, and we have the representatives of those three departments here. So first we're going to hear from the administration in terms of the outline of the implementation, and then we're going to have a bit of a back-and-forth conversation with some interview questions that we've prepared. So let's start with, well, let's ask Kim Mead to speak with us first. Kim, the first question I'll ask is, and then we'll get into the details, is what was the impetus for this fee?
Well, thank you, Sandor, for inviting us to share with you the Student Life Fee deliverables, and we're quite happy to speak to those. I think the impetus really came from a number of students who were actively engaged in the strategic planning processes at Brock University, whether it was in athletics or student services or student health services. And so they recognized some of the areas where we needed to see some improvement, we needed some additional programming, and that we didn't necessarily have the resources in place. And so our students rallied around and said, health and wellness on campus is very much a priority for us. And so that was really the impetus for student life.
So let's go through each of the departments. So we have athletics, recreational services, and student health services. So why don't we start on what is being implemented in terms of the athletics?
Okay, Sandor, it's Robert Hilson, and I serve the role of Director of Athletics here, and athletics is responsible for 28 varsity programs, now 8 club teams, and a camp program for about 2,000 students, both faculty and staff and in the community. And we had three areas. Number one is we had the area around clubs. Most universities, this is my fourth university, so I've served at Western University, formerly the University of Western Ontario, McMaster University, and the University of Ottawa. And we were, of those institutions, the only one without a club team program, so we could support additional teams. Someone like Fast Pitch, for example, has been here for 11 years, but has been homeless. BUSU would say, we do not have an infrastructure for sports teams. Recreational services would say that they do not facilitate inter-university competition, and athletics was simply saying we do not have the resources to coordinate you. So I'm proud to say that in year one, we actually have 8 additional teams. In fact, some of those teams were teams that we unfortunately had to cut in 2006 due to some rescission exercises. The second area was the area around school spirit and really building a community. And we've had two great successes so far. We had, if we look at this year, we had our O Week, and in through O Week, working with BUSU, we sold 1,700 packages for O Week. In addition, 800 concert tickets. And then leading into that homecoming day on that Saturday, we had a hockey game, and we had 1,400 people at that arena. And 5 busloads of students that came through BUSU, which we supported through this fee. But in addition, those that were driving, in addition, those taking public transit, we had a great environment and a magical game as we came back from a 5-1 deficit to win in overtime. In addition, we had a game involving Niagara College, and I know you're a Niagara College grad, and we had 1,000 people in the gymnasium, raised over $1,000 for United Way. So that's the whole area of bringing people together for a common Brock, so we can all be part of one team. Our third area is support for our existing teams. We had a lot of gaps when compared to other institutions and how we are funding our teams. For example, we do not fund non-conference competition. So we take a rugby team, let's say our women's rugby team, and we have them go play their first competition without ever having prepared them. So that poses both a risk management and just purely an experiential point of view. In addition, we had no support for things like strength and conditioning. So again, if we're looking at from a risk management, we're not preparing our student athletes to actually compete inter-university, as the other institutions I've been at all had those type of infrastructure in place. So that's kind of the impetus. So one, number one, school spirit. Number two, the area of new teams, clubs. And number three, support for our existing teams.
So what is the implementation from the Department of Student Health Services?
Thank you, Sandra. It's Melody from Student Health Services, the Director of Student Health Services. And our deliverables are mostly around mental health and health and wellness. So the students that we had that work for health services understand that there have not been enough resources in order to help students around mental health. So the deliverables have been to hire a full-time mental health nurse, to hire a health promotion educator, to increase some of the clinical pieces in health services, for example, a program called Walk and Talk, which is a combination, Be Well at Brock, which is a combination of nurses and students engaging together in terms of walking with other students who might not necessarily make it to a structured activity like at the zone or in one of the classes. So kind of doctors often say to students, you know, it would be really helpful if you exercise, that would, you know, help your health. And so this is one of the ways that they can manage that. Increase workshops in terms of mental health from students to students around identification and anti-stigma around mental health and early identification for students, understanding their symptoms, and encouragement to come into the resources at Brock. So some of the resources that we have implemented is a psychologist on campus, where we didn't have one before, and that's through the Student Development Center. Also, increased case consulting time with a psychiatrist, our own psychiatrist that works for us in health services. Increased screening tools. We've purchased one so far called eChug, which is around looking at assessment for alcohol and student alcohol use, as well as also engagement for student wellness. So that's around looking at different ways of communication through social media, through digital, through enhancing websites for students to be able to go to our website and get some extra tools. So that's around health and wellness support and mental health support and substance abuse support and connections within to both actually recreation and athletics in terms of programming. So we have students that are hired to do some extra programming in terms of helping students understand the link between physical activity and mental health and wellness. And also the creation of the 24-hour social space, which has now been opened, and the assessment for the fall break support. So those are the kind of deliverables from health services and student services.
Yeah. Hi, Sandor. It's Karen McAllister-Kenny from Recreation Services. So our department is responsible to provide recreational opportunities for students at Brock, and that includes both programs that we program, so things like intramural sports, where last year I think there were over 800 teams of students involved, around 7,000 students, to fitness programming, to things like yoga classes, certifications like students that want to take first aids or lifeguard or personal training. We also provide services for other departments, so for varsity athletics, so practice and game setups and management, academic courses. Many people don't realize there's over 100 hours of academic classes happen in the gymnasiums and the studios in Walker, managing the equipment for those. And then also things like university events, so open houses and health fairs and convocation and things like that. There's staff that in the background help with those things as well. As far as the referendum, we were one of, I think, three or four schools in Ontario where students actually had to choose to pay an extra fee to use the fitness center that was on campus for students. And that was part of the business plan when the Zone Fitness Center was built about 11 years ago. But as we progressed, many schools were able to remove that, so they went to referendum as well. And so this fee, I think, helps make the fitness programming and the Zone Fitness Center much more accessible for all students to use. We've increased the hours a bit, and that's helping. We've added a lot of fitness programming, and as much as possible, we try to hire qualified students to lead those programs. So the fitness programming, which includes things like spinning and stretch classes, and Mel's Walk and Talk is part of that program as well. So lots of different types of programs, and those have been quite well attended. We do monitor stats. We've shown already there's about 1,000 extra visits per week to the zone over this time last year, and we track it hourly, actually. And we're all very pleasantly surprised that it has not created, a huge bottleneck or anything like that. People have sort of spread themselves out, so while the numbers are bigger, the people are coming at different times of days, and it's working out quite well. In fact, I listen in the halls a lot to the students and the staff and faculty that come, and I think most people are pleasantly surprised. We've had to stop people a couple times, which we do every year. You know, you're going to have to wait a half an hour till the equipment comes open, but that's not unusual at busy times. So we've been... we think it's worked pretty well. We've added some different equipment. We've moved some things around to make traffic flow a little bit better in there. And it seems to be working out quite well for the students. We're also, I think, the largest student employer on campus. And so we are very conscious that whenever we add, whether it's hours to facilities or programs, that it is students that we are trying to hire. So we're around, I guess if you asked human resources, we're probably sending through the most timesheet authorizations and things like that for students who work with us. We're probably up around 400 students. So it's a positive that the funds go back into students so that they both get great experience working. Most of our students have to have certifications of some type to work, and also some pocket money for them as well while they're studying.
So one of the benefits will be that there's a lot of new job positions as a result of this. I've heard of full-time digital media coordinator. Is that a student, or like how many students? I'm not looking for a specific number, but you know, how do you characterize how many students are there being hired thanks to this fee?
Hi, it's Melody speaking. So yes, just a correction: we don't have a full-time digital coordinator. We have a student who's looking after the digital. So it's not full-time, it's a student job. And we have hired 10 students at this point to deliver different things, so digitally and website development, and as well as health and wellness programming.
Well, thank you for that presentation on the implementation of the fee. We're now going to go through some of the questions that we've prepared for everyone and see what we learn.
Are you tired of cheesy mainstream cultural affairs radio program with its gratuitous nudity, slide whistle sound effects, and crash shoe phone giveaways? If so, you're tuned to the perfect frequency on your FM radio dial. The Pizza Box Cadillac Radio Hour ain't about the gimmicks and the doodahs and the fancy pants whatnots. The Pizza Box Cadillac serves up a gritty, unpretentious, keeping it real brand of cultural reportage that can only be described as authentastic. Tune in every Friday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern Time when the Pizza Box Cadillac Hour begins radiating across the airwaves live from the Welland House in beautiful downtown St. Catharines.
One of the questions that was raised at the Brock University Student Administrative Council prior to the referendum was, why are these three departments being combined into an omnibus fee?
I'm going to answer that, and I want to start with saying that I do have some students now who deliver programming, and in delivering programming they are also privy to and part of our strategic planning, as well as understanding kind of what the kind of health of Brock students are. So in 2009 we did a survey which talked about different health perspectives, health health numbers for students, and we came up with a couple of very alarming concerns, and that was around mental health specifically. So in terms of the depression rate, and so examples, so the question was, have you ever felt so depressed that it was difficult to function? And so we had just 1,143 students at Brock all across different years answered that question, and it was 55% of students that answered it was so difficult that it was difficult to function. We looked at anxiety and overwhelming anxiety. Sorry, for the depression it was 36%, and for overwhelming anxiety it was 55%. We also looked at the loneliness rate at Brock, and it was around 63%. And the students who had ever seriously considered suicide was 6.7%. So we have had, so combined with those statistics and the statistics that at Health Services and Counseling at Brock, we were seeing more and more students with mental health concerns and issues. In the last 5 years, our mental health visits have gone up by 108%. And about 40% in the counseling center in the same time. So looking at that, the students were very concerned, and part of their job is to go out and talk to students about managing stress and looking at mental health, and encouraging students to recognize signs and to, to try and to take action in terms of coming to talk to health professionals and wherever else they can find resources to talk about that. So part of the discussions happened to be around things like, well, how do you make yourself healthier? How do you get yourself well? So they are already engaged in doing programs with recreation and athletics around issues like connectedness and social belonging and spirit within Brock. So we realized, looking at these numbers, that in fact, you know, the students realized that there was things that they needed to try and do to help their fellow students. So they had engaged in programs around recreation in terms of trying to have students become a little bit more active. So they had were already engaged in these departments in terms of combining. So,
but was it a misperception when it was called an omnibus? Is it not actually an omnibus at all? Because it is one offer, a mental health support system that just happens to go to three different departments of the university.
Sandra, I'm not going to actually necessarily answer that, but recreation and athletics is actually a combined fee. And it's a combined fee not just at Brock, but at all 20 institutions in Ontario. So we're actually a combined fee right from the beginning of time. And if you go to, for example, Western or McMaster, they've been a combined fee since the turn of the century in the 1900s. So that is how it occurs in athletics and recreation departments. And USA actually reports them as such.
Okay, so what about the question that about it being omnibus? I mean, this term omnibus, is it a misapplication of the term when it comes to this fee?
I think it isn't a misapplication of the term, because essentially what we've done is we've looked at synergies amongst departments and in working with students to say, how do we strengthen support for student life on campus, including health and wellness? And it's not going to be strictly restricted to the three departments that we're talking about today. We are certainly going to be engaging the student union and residences around the whole student life, health, and wellness. So to use the term omnibus is rather misleading, because in fact it is very much well across the institution that we hope that this student life kind of mission will take hold for all students.
So I guess it's the incorporation of elements like the 24-hour study space and putting that under the umbrella of mental health. How does a 24-hour study space or Reading Week fit under the umbrella of mental health?
So what we understand about mental health and all facets of mental health, whether you're, you know, looking at being preventative or launching anti-stigma campaigns or dealing with students in distress, there's not one single solution with respect to mental health. So we're looking at ways, whether it's in terms of academic regulations, with respect to the fall reading break, with respect to study hours and making them more widely available for students. We're looking at all kinds of supports. So you can put it under the category of mental health. It just supports generally health and well-being for students, and therefore their mental health in particular. So it all fits nicely together.
Was Reading Week already in effect? Had Reading Week already been approved prior to the referendum?
Yes, Reading Break was approved in November of 2011, so it had already been approved prior to the referendum question. But there were two parts to the Senate motion. The first part was to approve the calendar dates for the Reading Break on the basis of the rationale that it would help to alleviate a lot of the sort of stress and anxiety that students feel during that point in time of the term. And the second part of the motion, which was actually a very critical part of the overall motion, was that we really needed to assess the impact of Reading Break on mental health and wellness, and to demonstrate the value of Reading Break in order to continue it. So that was a very critical part, and that part is what falls under the referendum, is the ability to do an assessment of the impact of fall break. So we have engaged three faculty researchers and a PhD student, and they will lead an assessment project to assess the effectiveness and the impact of Reading Break so that hopefully it will ensure its continuation.
So the line item for fall break assessment and support, which is listed here as $12,000, that goes towards, like, how is that assessment taken place? Like, what does that mean, assessment? Is it surveys? Is it, well, what does that consist of?
Right. So the faculty and PhD candidate have designed a qualitative and quantitative survey to administer with students, and they're also planning to do some focus groups with students and do pre and post sort of fall break assessment. And then they will be doing, that will set the benchmark, and over the course of 3 years, they'll continue to do those surveys and look at the comparative data. So in terms of the fall break assessment, it will be an ongoing assessment that's research-driven to look at the impact. And I would just add that a number of Ontario universities have instituted now a fall break, but we're the only university that has actually planned and will be delivering an assessment of the fall break.
And what does the line item for the 24-hour study space go towards from the student life fee?
So the 24-hour study social space, we had to do some renovations in terms of putting in security cameras and ordering furniture, etc. And that actually came from my operating budget to be able to make that happen. It's the programming that we're covering through the student life fee. So we want to do some peer-to-peer programming and support in the 24-hour study social space.
BUSAC counselors last March, or I guess earlier in the March, in the late winter, when this was being presented through BUSAC as a student position, had the impression that the fee was being presented from the administration and that the student leaders involved were surrogates of the administration. How did the student leaders become involved in promoting and advocating and leading this campaign?
Oh, Sandor, I'll speak from it from an athletics point of view. So the year prior, we engaged over 500 people in our first ever strategic plan. So we engaged members of the community and alumni and BUSU and students and student athletes and senior administration. There were 12 different groups of people that we targeted. In addition, we advertised in the Brock Press, the Niagara Falls Review, the Welland Tribune, the St. Catharines Standard, asking for comments. We also sent an email to every Brock University alumni living in the Niagara region and to every Brock University athletic alumni anywhere in the world. And we asked for their comments of what they wanted to build. And through this, what we heard was these were the things that we were looking for as an athletic department in the next 5 years. In that room were students and student athletes, and they told us this is what they were looking for. And in our strategic plan, which was published a year beforehand, it said, well, these are the things you're looking for, and these are some of the levers. And one of the levers was potentially student fee. And then one of those people in the room was actually Breanne Veal, who you would have met last year when you were a member of the No side. She was actually in the room of student athletes at a time when we consulted them.
And she became the spokesperson for the Yes campaign during the March referendum.
She did.
Yep.
Yeah. So from that perspective, I looked at it from a grassroots perspective of listening first, then capturing. We went through 10 iterations of our strategic plan, of which we made public. We took our strategic plan and made that further public. And then from that, someone took a ball for us and said, hey, listen, can we make this thing happen? And that's how it came about from our perspective in athletics.
And she is a member of the hockey team?
Women's hockey team, yes.
Right. And the other leaders of the campaign were also hockey team members?
So no. So John DeLuca, Breanne knew through her involvement in the Walker Complex, as he was an employee of Recreation Services. And really, at the end of the day, recreation and athletics sort of had to go together. So we would be working on things together. So the concept of the zone access and things of that nature was sort of a shared kind of commonality. And then they connected through to student health through Tessa, who they also had a relationship with. So this really became a combined and joint effort. And I mean, if I'm looking at it from someone in 20 years in administration, they were a pretty awesome group of students, and they saw a vision and they went after it. So,
did they have any consultation from the administration in terms of developing their marketing? For example, wearing green, the green ribbons, anything like that. Did the administration provide them any instructions as to how to lead their campaign?
I'm not even aware of the green, actually, so maybe I'm really behind the ball here. And I think at the same time as the gearing up around the referendum question in the campaign, there was also on campus, USA had a mental health awareness campaign, and I think it was called MindHack or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But those were very separate types of campaigns. One was a provincial student association, and then, of course, our students were working on their own marketing, if you would call it that, their own awareness campaign with respect to the referendum.
So how was the $20 number arrived at?
So I think that it's a combination of two things. Certainly the areas like athletics and student health services had identified needs based on the feedback from students in terms of what they need for supports and the resources that they needed. So that helps to develop a budget line, as you will. But there was also a very clear recognition when things were checked out around fees with students and student leaders that there's a threshold. So that's where the $20 per credit with a threshold of $100 came into play. If we were to look at what it actually potentially could have been in terms of covering off all the costs in the wish list under those categories of student life, it would have been far more than $20 per credit. There was also recognition that Brock has one of the lowest ancillary fees in the province of Ontario. So we knew that, yes, it was a bit of a jump in a fee, the ancillary fee for our students. However, across the board and compared to other Ontario universities, we were still at the lowest end of ancillary fees.
During the campaign, one of the things I said is that that was a problem. And I said so because the budget was a top-down budget. $20 times 75,000 credits equals $1.5 million. As I said at the time, it was a large pie which the administration was slicing up and handing to themselves. How do you respond to that talking point?
I'll mention one thing from an athletic standpoint is that prior to the referendum, we were providing services. We were ranked 17 of 18 schools that have disclosed. So RMC, for example, does not collect student ancillary fees, and OCAD does not collect them for athletics because they don't have any athletic fees. So, and Algoma wasn't yet a member of the OUA. So of the Ontario schools, we were ranked 17th of 18 schools. Even with this referendum, we were ranked 14th of 18 schools. If we look at now the services, what we're actually providing, we provide the sixth most number of opportunities pre-referendum. So we were being funded 17th, but providing the sixth greatest number of opportunities for student athletes. So from that perspective, we had two questions to fundamentally answer in our strategic plan. Should we reduce the number of opportunities, or should we increase the revenues that come along with that? And what was determined by 500 people we consulted was really, we want to pursue excellence, but not at the cost of opportunity. It rang really clearly. Karen actually served on our panel as a member of Recreation Services on our strategic planning panel. And that was a clear message to us. So we are actually now providing greater than six, I haven't done my numbers yet, but probably fourth or fifth in the province in terms of opportunities, funded 14th. So from an athletics and recreation standpoint, I still think there's tremendous value.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to be splitting hairs about the how did we arrive at the $20 number. It's just when I review the Ministry of Training, University and Colleges Operating Funding Distribution Manual, it has language that says that when an administration has a fee, that fee needs to be, the budget of which needs to be demonstrated. And so the perception at the time during the campaign, which I was a part of, was that the budget was for a top-down budget as opposed to a bottom-up budget. So a bottom-up budget would be how many chairs, how many employees, and then you arrive at a number. But the answer you've provided, I suppose, already is that $20 was a threshold number. So I guess this transitions to the next question, which is how does the public know that this is in compliance with the Ministry of Training, University and Colleges Operating Funding Distribution Manual? How can we as a public know that that is true?
Well, there are two ways. One is we can certainly provide the section from the operating manual 5.2, and it points to the need for to follow the ancillary fee protocol, which was absolutely strictly followed in this case in terms of the introduction of a non-tuition related ancillary fee. So the ancillary fee protocol was followed. And if there is any question about the ancillary fee protocol being followed, we certainly respond to requests from MTCU, for example. If there's ever a fee that's in question, MTCU will contact us, will provide the rationale, happy to do so. And the other thing is as a university and a publicly, accountable institution, all of our fees and our reporting goes back through an auditing process that's done every year.
Another one of the perceptions at the time was that things like 24-hour study space are tuition-related fees. How do you respond to that being non-tuition related?
Well, if you read the operating manual, it's actually not tuition related. So what we're providing in the 24-hour study social space would be programming, peer-to-peer programming, etc. So it has nothing to do with the delivery of course instruction, which is really what the tuition related compulsory fees are related to.
So at other institutions there would be these sort of programs are also not provided through the tuition they're provided, if they are provided at all, through ancillary fees.
Absolutely. In fact, most institutions, my colleagues that I speak with, there have been student fees in place for several years that cover off a number of services that we currently cover from the operating budget. And that's why we have the lowest ancillary operating fees in Ontario. If you look at our peer institutions, most have a fairly significant student fee to cover and offset all of the programming that's provided, that supplemental support programming.
During the campaign, there was some criticism that OSAP students are paying for healthcare costs. Is students hiring a psychologist and psychiatrist merely downloading healthcare costs to OSAP students?
So first of all, students are not hiring a psychiatrist, just to be clear. Okay, the psychiatrist, it's very difficult to find psychiatrists, I think in Ontario, that don't have a long waiting list. And we've been fortunate enough to be able to have two part-time psychiatrists agree to work at Brock. So the psychiatrists come in through OHIP and medical and healthcare provision from the province, and so they see patients. They get referred patients. So the cost that we were looking for in terms of the psychiatrist was really to answer the students' questions. How come I have to wait for a psychiatrist? I really want to see a psychiatrist, and what can we do about that? And there, so in order to kind of maximize resources, then we were looking at being able to pay some fees around case management so that the psychiatrist can help other people, counselors or the mental health nurse or physician or whomever, on a very timely basis to be able to answer questions. So in terms of, I think one of the questions was around medication. Yes, the psychiatrist can be able to write prescriptions for students, and as well as the doctors can, the family doctors that work at health services or anywhere in Ontario. But it's around timely service so that's part of it. In terms of the psychologist that's coming out of the Student Development Center, and a psychologist are a PhD level, so it's a different level than the counselors that they have at Brock. And that a psychiatrist can offer different pieces than a counselor can in terms of assessment, psychoassessment, students typically would pay for, and also case management and crisis management at a different level. So that was something that was determined that was a need.
So to be clear, for the breakdown that we have in the budget, 27% of the $20 goes to student health services. Of that, 48% goes to what's described as psychiatric and psychological support, which is $197,000 a year. So what is that? What does that money go towards?
It goes towards salary in order for the psychologist and some of the psychiatrists' ability to manage case management and consultation.
This October, there's a referendum which may repeal the $20 fee. Mm-hmm. What are the consequences to these programs if that fee is repealed for next year?
It would be very unfortunate to have to withdraw or suspend any of the programs and the supports, the student employment positions, the staffing positions that have already been dedicated as a result of the student life fee. So there are things that will continue. Obviously the fall reading break would continue, but we would not be able to assess it going into year two. So it wouldn't necessarily continue beyond year two because we wouldn't have data to support it, as an example. The 24-hour study social space, we could likely try and continue with study social space during exam period, as we've done in the past, but it would only be restricted to exam period for certain hours, so we wouldn't have the programming support again to be able to necessarily continue with it. And then I'll let Karen speak to certainly the zone, because obviously the zone would no longer be made available to all students, and they would have to cover off the fee. And certainly Robert could speak to the implications for athletics, but I think, one major area of concern for us is with respect to health and wellness on campus, and mental health in particular. And every year, We have students who struggle. We want to be able to support them. We also want to be an institution that provides access to students with mental health disabilities. We want to be able to have a psychologist in place, a psychiatrist in place, so that, once again, we have the funding to be able to support access to education for students and students with mental health disabilities. And we want to help them to succeed while they're here, and that's why all the mental health programming is extremely important. But I'll pass it over to Karen to speak to one particular component, and that is the zone.
Sure. So in our case, prior to the referendum, students chose to pay for access to the Zone Fitness Center. And we were at, I believe last year it was $152 per student for an 8-month membership. There was less fitness programming that went with that. And the number of hours, while not great, was less that was available to students to use it. So we would need to go back to charging students for the use. And we would be limiting the number of fitness programs that were included in those fees. And I think for us, it's all about healthy choices. And the students at Brock look at what other students get at other universities. And I actually have one in first year right now, who they know what other students are getting, and they do compare. And they know that at other places, access to fitness centers and things like that are part of what they pay for in their fees. And I think I think we want to provide that to our students. It wasn't possible when we first built the center, but this fee has helped with that. I think it is giving more students the ability to come and be physically active. And if you look at research, there is so much research coming out of the States, and especially related to college and university students, about the importance of physical activity in their day. These students are not 19, so it's healthy choices for many the first and second year. And if we can get them onto that path where activity is part of it, and social, and even things, and I know it's not included in the referendum, but being part of an intramural team and having a group of friends that you can come out, once or twice a week and play some silly game, inner tube water polo or, something. Quidditch is next weekend, I think, or something like that. It gives students a sense of belonging. And I think that's one of the things we really want to provide for students. And this fee is helping with that. So people don't have to dig into their pockets when they arrive at Brock.
Could I also add, Sandor, that, when students apply for OSAP, for financial assistance, for example, and, the OSAP assessment is based on tuition and ancillary fees and all of the related fees. So, it is included in the financial assistance, but even above and beyond that, when I spoke of access, it's access to students so they can participate in post-secondary education and preferably at Brock. But we want to make sure that students can attend and be successful, but also that if they have financial distress, we will support them. And so if we have a student whereby that $100 is just not affordable and above and beyond what they're getting in terms of OSAP and other financial resources, we have an Office of Student Awards and Financial Aid who on an ongoing basis will assess for bursaries and student loan assistance.
Let's hear from athletics about the consequences of losing the fee.
So we have 8 teams that are on the docket right now that are teams that are new to Brock. They're now participating. We're in consultation with another 4 or 5 different teams. And we will just not have the resources to manage these teams. So the once homeless will be homeless again. From an athletics point of view, if we look at this from a 5-year planning perspective, we just cannot support financially and from a human resources standpoint the 630 opportunities that we're providing, and we will decrease that. The third thing, which I think is actually the most sad, is that we just had our largest win in my 2.5 years here, where we brought our community together. We had 7-year-olds high-fiving students, and we had 75-year-olds high-fiving students, and we were one community. For one night, we were one community. And the students that we're bringing in through the sport management program and through some of the kinesiology programs that are actually building that community for us, we just will not be able to afford to do anymore. I find it would be, from my perspective, coming from a Western, coming from a McMaster, which is really known for its spirit, I know how to build spirit. I know we can do this at Brock. And going backwards would be pretty disheartening from all the students I've engaged. They've all told me what they want. I think we have the know-how to build it. We've had success already. And I think it would be a bit of a step backward, unfortunately.
I think also concerning mental health, I mean, we've now been able to increase the time, that increase the ability to see students in crisis right then and there, because we have a mental health nurse, and our mental health nurse is supporting the doctors and the psychiatrists and the students and being able to manage exactly all the right doors in terms of students managing all the different resources at Brock.
Over the summer, there has been a new task force created, the Presidential Task Force, which in Dr. Lightstone's letter says that there'll be an end-to-end reassessment of the institution. I guess the question is, is any members of this conversation on that task force or have a voice on that task force in order to provide saying, look, we've got a vulnerability here. And that vulnerability is at any time students have the prerogative to run a referendum and repeal this fee. The consequence of which is, as you've described, there'd be no salary for psychiatrist, psychologist, and the health nurse, and there'll be a loss in the athletics clubs. Does the administration have, and maybe this is a loaded question, but does the administration have more responsibility to find solutions outside of the referendum process? I don't even know how you'd answer that, but what? I guess I'll just continue. Go ahead.
So, Sandor, I'm not directly involved in the task force or the working group. I do know that the program review will be looking at all administrative areas of the university in terms of the program review. And certainly our areas in supporting the academic mission, we fall within the administrative areas. So they will be looking at our areas. And, you know, the program review will look at areas that in terms of their performance and the resources they have available, and basically, is it status quo? Do they need an additional investment? You know, are there areas that there could be more efficiency, etc.? So we'll go through all of that process, but I think there is certainly a recognition that if we had not seen the results of this referendum, then there's going to be a great deal of competition for very limited resources on campus, and I think the students in supporting the referendum have taken a step to ensure that they have the supports and the services and resources in place that they will need over the next several years.
During the campaign, former BUSU president Daud Grewal posted on Facebook that this fee doesn't have transparency. Now, we are about 6 months later, and here you are talking to us about the contents of the fee. So how does the students feel, how can they know that the transparency will maintain? And that the transparency will be in depth, and that the students are now partners?
Sure, I'd be happy to answer that. So one of the things that I've proposed to the current BUSU executive and administration is that we'd be happy to form a student life advisory committee and have representation from BUSAC, and if they want to have members at large, to sit down with the departments that deliver on the student life fee, and so that there could be some two-way conversation, some feedback in terms of the programming that we've introduced, ideas as we move forward, and certainly every opportunity for sharing of information and transparency. The other thing that we'd be very happy to do is report back to BUSAC at any point in time in a written format, disclose expenditures, etc. Happy to do that. So absolutely, if students still have outstanding questions, either during the upcoming referendum process or following that, we're quite happy to make that information available.
And Sandor, I believe in following actually the feeds around BUSU government, that there was a motion passed in the last BUSAC meeting that actually elected, I believe, two individuals to sit on the task force that Kim references. So I don't know
regarding the student life.
Correct.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll look more into that. I wanted to respond to what you were saying about the consequences of losing the fee. During the campaign, or actually after the campaign was complete, I was irate. But it wasn't because of the contents of the fee. It was because of the process that the fee was implemented in. There's some room to grow for the student culture at Brock University, in my opinion. But what I discovered was, as I looked through the contents of the fee and I saw the benefits, first we called it no to student life. Then we called it stop student life. And then a light went off in my head and I changed it to reform student life. And the reason was exactly what you said. Because it sounds like it's really great to have athletics club funding. That to me is, again, I'm speaking from my opinion, that sounds like the best thing that's taking place in this fee at that time. Now I'm hearing even more about it, and I'm not sure what my opinion is overall, but the reason that we changed the name of a group from Stop the Fee to Reform the Fee was exactly the point that you raised. So we're almost done with this interview, and we have just a few minutes left. I just wanted to sort of ask about what kind of lessons does this provide us? We met last month with this group last month at a student life fee committee, and I presented some of my thoughts and my perspective from last March. And one of the points I raised was that the Brock Press hadn't analyzed or presented the fee to the public. One of the points that the current campaigner who's leading against the student life fee, Anthony Deeb, says is that the students weren't adequately informed. Is that something that, you know, as an opportunity to grow, that as a culture, that how do we do that? How do we improve, from a marketing terminology, message penetration into the population? How does the population become more informed so that a significant quorum of individuals can participate? I know it's a philosophical question, but since I have you here.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to take a stab.
Go for it.
So one of my comments about the last referendum, okay, so we should learn moving forward, was that in the constituency of student athletes and their network of people, they played scared. There are a lot of rules within BUSU that says where you can and cannot campaign, where you can and cannot even speak about the issue. So Karen and I actually even had some dialogue of, wow, we're at a university where this is what we should be encouraging. And our student athletes, this is only one population of the three, they were afraid to speak about this anywhere except at that table. So I think that's a room to grow, because I really honestly believe, no matter what you think of, is I believe that we're here to share and debate these things.
Okay.
So you get the motion out there, you talk about it, you debate it, and then you see whether this is good for an institution or not. Mm-hmm. And I believe that if you're on the yes side, there are a lot of rules that keep you to basically controlling your exchanging your message at a table that's 6 feet by 2 feet.
Right. So the BUSU Constitution defines that referendums can only have 10 days of campaigning. And I actually agree that this has been part of my, if you will, agenda, which is to create a legislative debate process that extends prior to campaign period. A 10-day campaign isn't enough to even analyze all of the material, let alone engage in a back-and-forth legislative debate as to the pros and cons of a given issue. So thank you for that feedback. And we're not really sure what we could do with that, because we do have a constitution, and the constitution is set in forth for some fairness. It's meant to be, in fact, even in, although in Canada, for example, on a national stage, a campaign is like 40 days or something to that effect. However, political discussion is constantly taking place. And that's why I've started this radio show. And that's why I engage in the work I do, is so that we as a culture can constantly be engaged in political dialogue instead of that being limited to, as you said, a 2-foot by 6-foot table during a 10-day period. Well, I think that's a great place to end the conversation. Thank you. We've been talking to the administration with Kim Mead, the Vice Provost of Student Services, Robert Hilson, the Director of Athletics, Karen McAllister Kenny, the Director of Recreational Services, and Melody Schick Porter, the Director of Student Health Services. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sandra. I just wanted to say thank you for inviting us in to share our perspective, and we appreciate it.
Well, that is it for this week's episode. Next week, we are going to be talking about the Marilyn I. Walker Performing Arts Center currently being constructed in downtown St. Catharines. And we're going to have a representative of Brock University to come on in and talk about that establishment. You can email us at povradiobrock@gmail.com. Find us on facebook.com/povradio. Yeah.